I want you to imagine the future in motion where all cars are green, bicycles rule, and public transit is fast, frequent, and fun. It's a world where mobility is sustainable and accessible to everyone, where energy is clean and abundant, renewable and affordable, where communities aren't just smart, they're intelligent and nurturing places to live. So come along and explore that world with me on this EV World Future in Motion podcast. Hi, this is Bill Moore for EV World, and we're going to be talking about the future in motion. And in this case, it's going to be talking with Chris Anthony. Chris is the CEO and co-founder of Aptera, a company which gained quite a bit of exposure and notoriety, a decade ago, and lapsed into obscurity, and we'll talk about that and why all that happened, but now has really chosen what I think might be a great time to be revived and to offer a charge-free electric car. That sounds intriguing. So, Chris, welcome to EV World.
Thanks, Bill. I appreciate it. I also have Steve here with me, too.
Fantastic. Well, I'm glad we were able to get both of you guys together. Steve, welcome.
Hi, Bill. Thanks for having us.
Oh, that's a good quality, too. That's great. I wasn't sure we could pull this off. Thanks for doing the conferencing on your end, guys. As you know, I have a little bit of difficulty conferencing on this end because of the hardware that I have set up. But anyway, hey guys, well, first of all, welcome back to the EV World.
Thank you.
It's exciting to hear. When I saw the announcement that Aptera was back, I was thrilled because obviously, back 10 years ago, we were, I even got a chance to, be at the, were you guys in Carlsbad, I think, at the time? Or maybe you still are.
Yes.
Yeah, we still are basically in that same area.
Okay, great. Well, look, let's bring everybody here up to speed, first of all. Give us a little bit of a background of that early first iteration of the company from roughly 2006, I believe, when you founded it, to sadly the demise around 2011. So just tell everybody just bring us quickly up to speed on the company back then.
Well, back then it was, a lot of the stuff is publicly known, pretty much the entire history of the company. I suppose you could find sleuthing around the internet. But Chris and I started the company back in 2006. He had started a boat company called Epic Boats, making the world's most ingenious wakeboard boat.
Yep.
And using resin fusion composites. And I was working at a biotech company and ordering composite supplies to be delivered to their shipping department because they wouldn't deliver them at the time. UPS wouldn't deliver to your private house, to your personal residence. And so that's how we met a common friend and said, hey, I know somebody named Chris who's also using this composite stuff. Why don't you guys meet? And for the longest time, I had his name in my phone as Crazy Boat Guy, even for like the first year or so, just because that's how I knew him. He was a Crazy Boat Guy. But he basically... when I met him, I said, I don't know if I can do this or not, but I know if he and I are doing it together, there's no way we could fail. And so I think in a pretty short order, we'd raised $40 million. We'd hired a professional management team, and we handed over the company, I think, at a pretty advanced stage in development to the professional management team. And then we left sometime after that. But they took a little bit different path than we would have taken, and things just didn't work out. It's unfortunate, but we like to be forward focused here at Aptera, and so we're positive about the future. We're positive about the advancements in technology and where we're going to take the company now.
So that version of the company basically went away. I think the IP properties got bought by a Chinese company that essentially didn't end up doing anything with it. As I understand it, then you guys began to reacquire those IP rights. So, bring us up to that sort of interregnum period when you guys thought, well, we're not going to let this thing die. Let's see what we can do to bring it back. So, tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, beginning of last year, we were fortunate enough to get some of the rights back, and Steve and I sat down and said, okay, well, what would Aptera look like if it existed today? And, you know, with the advancements in battery technologies and advancements in other EV component technologies, you know, what we're really left with was a very efficient vehicle that could take advantage of the supreme energy density that batteries pack today, and something that could get over 1,000 miles range per charge. And I think that was the initial number that that really got us excited about a relaunch was, you know, if we could have a vehicle that gets more than 1,000 mile range per charge, we think that would, you know, probably open people's eyes to the possibilities of efficiency. Now that people are used to Tesla and they're used to Nissan and they're used to, you know, many other EVs being on the road, they can understand what it means to go 1,000 miles per charge. Whereas when we were starting, you know, over a decade ago, people had no idea how to rationalize electric performance, MPGe, watt hours per mile. Those things just didn't exist in the vernacular back in those days. In fact, the very first prototype that we built it as a single cylinder diesel, model. Yeah. Because the only way that we could show our investors how supreme the performance was to go out and get, you know, 330 miles per gallon.
Right.
So we threw a really efficient, you know, diesel motor in there so we could show them a mile per gallon number versus putting an electric drivetrain in there where they just wouldn't be able to understand the electric equivalent. So, you know, it's an exciting time to be an EV. The supply chains are much different. You know, they exist now. A decade ago, we didn't even have a J1772 connection standard 10 years ago. So we couldn't even figure out how to plug the car into charge back in those days. So, you know, 1,000 miles range and advancements in the EV supply chain, you know, gave Steve and I the confidence to really jump in with both feet.
Okay.
And start to put the puzzle back together here.
Yeah. So let's talk about some of the changes between the Type 2 that sort of rolled out in the 2010-2011 time frame, and now I understand you're calling it, if you will, the Type 3. So what's different between that model and the current design?
Lots have changed. I can give you a few perks, and then Steve can. You know, the first thing we did was go back and re-examine the vehicle aerodynamically. The software tools have changed a lot over the last decade, and now we can put in aerodynamic models into the computer, and we can have it iteratively, examine changes in the design to give us maximum performance aerodynamically much quicker than we could before. We actually had one of the largest supercomputing clusters, at least on the West Coast of the United States, a decade ago, to do aerodynamic computational analysis. And now, you know, you can basically do it with a really beefy, you know, CAD computer, but do it multiple times over, you know, just a couple hours instead of,
right,
you know, took us 3 or 4 days to run a simulation before. So we started out with aerodynamics, and we decreased the aerodynamic drag by some 13%. And then we started to dig into lightweight materials and other stuff that Steve can talk about.
Go ahead, Steve.
Well, just interesting to note, when Chris and I were first, when we started the company, we said, look, we can't just say this is a low drag design, right? We designed it based on the latest principles for low drag vehicle design, which was the Shell Eco Marathon type cars and solar racers and that kind of thing. And we said, we've got to have a third party, you know, validate this for us. You know, who would people trust? And so we had the idea of, well, what if we could get a NASA seal of approval on it? So we actually looked and found out that we could, and then we did subsequently hire NASA, their low speed wind tunnel at Langley. And we sent them, I think at the time it was like $15,000, which was quite a lot of money for us.
Yeah.
And then all the CAD data. And they came back and asked, they said, what's your trick? How did you get the drag of this vehicle so low, as low as you did? And then when we saw the results, we saw that they were using an off-the-shelf software program at the time called StarCCM Plus. And so we found out we had a connection to the company. One of the guys doing work for Chris, his dad was a founder of that company.
Mm.
So we ended up hiring him. He was our chief aerodynamicist, and we built a 48-node Linux supercomputer cluster just running Star CCM Plus. And as Chris said, at the time, it was the largest, I think, in the country. And every single part that that touched the air, you know, had to go through the aerodynamicist and prove its its justify its existence, so to speak. And the composites, you know, was a big part of it too. I mean, we used a blend of both sort of ruggedized boat technology and Formula One aerospace technology in a way to make it easy to manufacture, but also very lightweight and strong. And we've taken that to a whole nother level with a lot of IP. I don't think we can talk about now, but basically it's going to increase our throughput by significant factors than we had at that time. So we're really excited about that because it gives us the opportunity to scale much quicker than we had previously thought even possible with the plastics and composites.
Okay, now, and when you, what you're referring to is the ability to what, manufacture multiple
yes,
units more
quickly? The throughput of the part production is okay. Almost, I would say, an order of magnitude faster now because of some of the new IP that we've created and verified and are trying to protect. And so we're excited about that, like I said, because it really, it just opens up the doors to production possibilities that weren't possible before.
Right, because, you know, typically when you're talking about composites, you're talking about hand layups and multiple layers and, of, you know, materials and fillers and sanding and, you know, the it takes time, you know. They're very time intensive.
Yeah.
So you guys have developed or are working on a way to improve that then, I gather.
That's right.
Cool.
Yeah, basically, you know, producing parts per minute instead of parts per hours. You know, the traditional and resin infusion method that we used in the past took about 4 or 5 hours per part, which meant you had to have a lot of mold to get a lot of part production.
Yep.
Now we've reduced that, you know, down into the minutes, you know, 6 to 20 minutes, depending on the part. And that's a huge increase in cycle time for your mold. So that means you can produce a lot more parts per mold,
right?
Which makes life a lot easier. So another advantage that we really came across in the decades since the previous version of the Aptera is you know, lightweight metal fabrication, 3D printing of metal, and the examination of how metal parts can be built, i.e. there's you know, artificial intelligence driven generative design now. That you can put a metal part that requires a certain amount of strength into the computer, and it can iteratively go through the design and take out material, you know, thousands of times an hour until it comes up with an optimal shape, which gives you the lightest weight at strongest part possible. I'm sure you've seen some metal parts and designs where the parts start to look like the hollow bird bones, or, you know, very organic shape. But yeah, we're trying to use that extensively with the Aptera because, you know, it can strip 30 to 50% of the weight out of a part and still yield the same strength, which is just great for us. And it's something that really didn't exist 10 years ago. You know, you could hand iterate in CAD and then test the strength through FEA. But it was a very, very slow process, and it was just something that wasn't tenable, you know, to do. But now you can plug it in the computer and, you know, give it a few hours, and it'll go through thousands of iterations and then just spit out basically a result that says, this is what your part should look like. So then you just have to figure out how to build it.
That's amazing. Yeah. So what are we talking about in terms of, let's say, percentage of weight reduction between the Type 2 all-electric and the new Type 3?
Yeah, we haven't really settled on the nomenclature for the launch vehicle, but we will into the summer. We'll announce official pricing and options here probably mid to late summer, and then we'll also announce, you know, kind of formalized how we're going to name it. But the difference between the new one and the old one in terms of weight, you know, I would say we've shaved at least 30% off the weight of the previous vehicle.
Fantastic. Now,
yeah, that was, you know. No, go ahead.
No, I was just going to, no, you go right ahead.
Well, I was just going to say that was, it was always a challenge, you know, when you're dealing with new technology and trying to do something different, and you've got, you know, you've got this really precise amount of what I call the, you know, Detroit experience that you need. You don't want too much, and very little is actually could be too much. But you absolutely need to have it, because if one thing Detroit knows how to do is to make lots of things and to make them well. You know, you can buy any new car today, and it's as you couldn't have imagined the reliability of it 10 years ago, 15 years ago.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things they bring to the table. But for us, actually, it ended up, what weight was one of the things that we really struggled with the Detroit team to, you know, help us pay attention to, because it fell off the wayside towards the end. And I think you saw some of the poor performance in the X01 vehicle, S01 vehicle, and the XPRIZE, and that was in, not all the reasons, but in part due to its excessive weight.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about the propulsion, the drive system here now. As I understand, you are going to be having in-wheel motors. This is a what I would call a tadpole, tricycle-type design with two front, you know, widely spaced front wheels and then a rear drive wheel. I'm guessing that the in-wheel motor is going to be on that rear wheel?
It's on all three, actually.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, all-wheel drive gives it some amazing benefits. Torque vectoring in between the wheels gives you, you know, very specific traction control in almost any condition. And you can tune the vehicle performance to the efficiency number that you want. So you can either tune for max power or tune for max efficiency. And, you know, at highway speeds, you may only be running with one motor at highway speeds, because that's all the power you need. And all right, that gets you the most efficient running power. But yeah, the in-wheel motors do great things for us in terms of packaging, in terms of ease of maintenance, and you know, much better torque, much better performance numbers. Does so much. Unfortunately, 10 years ago, they just weren't an option. They weren't you know, automotive grade yet. They just had a long ways to go. But yeah, in the decades since the first Aptera, they've come into fruition, and we're working with a company called Alafe in Slovenia. And they have, you know, a million miles of testing on these motors now, and great durability testing. And, you know, they're built to any automotive spec that you could find. They can run underwater. They can run through mud. They can be frozen. They can, you know, do all those things. So,
pretty cool. The funny thing about Alafe is it reached out to us about 10 years ago, right? We were both starting, and we weren't far enough along for them, and they weren't far enough along for us. And it just so happened, we you know, got, when we decided to restart the company, we reached back out to them, and they've made a tremendous amount of progress. They were on, you know, probably their 10th generation of product, and, you know, OEM tested and certified. And so I flew out there last year, in part of also going to a trade show for one of Chris's other companies, and, drove to Slovenia, spent 2 or 3 days there with them, and was really impressed with the team, the technology, and how real it was. And so I'm really excited that this is a part of our solution. You know, it's something that's designed in from the beginning. It makes a lot of sense. It's, we've got the freedom to do this, whereas with OEM, it's, you know, there's so many constituents in the OEM. You know, you can't suggest in a manufacturer something that doesn't use a transmission, because you've got an entire, you know, transmission powertrain group that says, well, you've got to have a transmission, right? You've got to have gears. Yeah. What are we going to do?
Yeah.
And so we have the luxury of that freedom, and we're going to take advantage of it every way that we can.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the solar aspect of this, because that's kind of one of the headline claims here, is that, you know, this is an electric vehicle. You never have to essentially ever plug in, at least as long as it, you know, sits outside for, you know, all day or whatever. So let's talk about that. You've got solar cells, it looks like, from the photograph, sort of embedded in the aero shell, like, for want of a better term. I don't want to call it chassis, because that sounds clunky and you know, 19th century. So how did that all work out?
Yeah, we had a solar technology on the original Aptera. You know, as far as we know, that the largest solar package on any production intent vehicle ever. But then the technology kind of fell by the wayside. In the last few years, other companies have sought to put solar on some EVs to increase their range, much like us. The problem is, they use five times as much power as us.
Right.
So you can put a nice solar package on a Prius, but it only gets you, 6-8 miles a day worth of range.
Yeah.
Which, it's a pretty, pricey package, and you can't really justify it for only 6 miles extra a day. But if you only use 100 watt hours per mile, and you put a nice solar package of over 3 square meters on a vehicle that can produce about 700 watts, you can yield over 4 kilowatt hours a day of power, and that'll get you over 40 miles range. The average driver in the U.S., goes about 31 miles a day.
Yep.
That's even less in Europe.
Yeah.
So if you can completely cover your daily drive cycle with just power from the sun, you effectively have a vehicle that you might never, ever have to plug in. You might never, ever have to touch a cord to put it into your electric vehicle at all. So, we had aspirations to use the power of the solar 10 years ago, but the solar cells weren't nearly efficient enough. They were 12 to 15% efficient, but now solar cells are 22 to 24% efficient. So we have much more efficient cells, and we have a lighter weight, more capable vehicle, and at 100 watt hours per mile, it just made sense that, gosh, we shouldn't just put a little small patch of solar on the roof. We should put it on the rear deck lid. We should put it on the hood.
Yeah.
We should make the whole top solar. So that really was our thinking. And then when you couple that with over 40 miles a day of charge range, it's a really compelling value proposition.
Yeah.
So.
Well, let's sort of get a little bit more practical, narrowed down here. Now, do you have an actual vehicle prototype that you have and that you've equipped with the panels, or are we still talking CAD drawings and illustrations and power projections?
We do not have a vehicle yet. What we do have is a representative model of the vehicle. So we did. We built the solar panels out in the same angular and curvature configuration as the vehicle. And we have that out in the sun. We've had got like 3,000 hours of testing on it now.
Okay.
But we're able to quickly turn it, to replicate different angles of the sun hitting it, and then basically just get a charge profile of how much yield you get throughout the day. And we've been running that since last year. So we have some pretty good data on it already. So
how long before when can we expect you guys to have a prototype, actual vehicle that, somebody in the media could jump in, or, one of your investors jump in?
Our engineering path right now puts us to having vehicles this summer.
Okay.
Our first vehicles, middle summer and, later vehicles in later summer. When we actually have those vehicles ready for somebody to set in, from the press, is up in the air, because a lot of engineering challenges
sure.
can crop up as we start to put these vehicles together. But the goal is to announce full pricing and options at the same time that we let people touch and feel and see the car sometime this summer. And then the intent would be to use all that we learn from these first three development vehicles that we're building to roll that knowledge into production vehicles intended by the end of the year. So that's the strategy now.
So where do you see manufacturing happening? There in the Southern California area, or looking for some state that's looking to build if they can't get the Cybertruck, we'll give them the Aptera.
Yeah, we wish Southern California was more business friendly, but it certainly is tech and sunshine friendly. We anticipate building the first vehicles here in Southern California, and then possibly spreading out sub-assembly manufacturing and maybe part manufacturing to other parts of the nation, and then opening up maybe smaller production facilities across the nation and other areas that may be close to our customers, but you know, we have more incentive to build in than
that's actually, that's something that's kind of, we don't use the word disruptive anymore, but when you look at our capital cost per per dollar of revenue compared to, let's say, a traditionally made vehicle, and I look at a Tesla Model 3 as a traditionally made vehicle. I mean, that's a fantastic vehicle in terms of its electric performance and everything else, but, you know, at the end of the day, it's a steel car. It has hundreds of parts that are stamped out and have to be welded together and,
right,
and whatnot. And so, so that, that forces its manufacturer in a highly centralized place because that equipment is so capital intensive. You can't easily replicate it across the country. You don't want to move it across the country. So that's why you've got these big centers. You know, that's why we had Detroit, you know, area of common shared resources. And with the Aptera, you know, we don't really, we have the opposite of that problem. I mean, our tooling by comparison is so inexpensive. We can replicate this facility relatively easily. So we may not have to certainly have one facility that handles all of the country's demand. It could be one on the East Coast and one on the West Coast, as Chris said. And the reason why that is because our composite tech lets us do it at a much lower capital cost, and at the same tack time, a vehicle could come off the line, the same tack time of a Ford or a Model 3, but without the same capital cost of the die stamping and tooling.
Right. So let's
also have some technologies that don't require, you know, big spray boosts and emission controls. Our new composite technology that we alluded to earlier can be done, you know, in open air. There's no fumes, emissions, and we aren't painting the composite parts like a, you know, traditional metal part would need to be painted.
Right.
We're going to be vinyl. You know, we've seen cars with vinyl wraps. You know, very similar technology for us, in that we're going to have vinyl coatings for the parts.
Oh, okay.
That go into production. So you don't have to have a spray booth. You're not spraying anything in the air. You're not, harming the environment, you know, every time you build
right.
a part. You just, you build a part, you pull it out of the mold, you trim it up, and then you coat it with vinyl, and you send it on to the next step. So.
Okay. Let's talk about the market for these. You know, we've had probably one of the shocks of last year was when Tesla rolled out the Cybertruck, not at all what I think any of us were expecting, and yet they're talking about, 400,000 reservations for that thing, something like that? So, you know, something strange and unusual, you know, it certainly can attract a following here. You know, since you guys have, you know, come back on the stage again, what kind of reaction are you seeing to, you know, to your efforts this time around?
Yeah, you know, the Cybertruck, I give it all the credit in the world. From a pricing perspective, it's the most mileage per dollar of any EV ever announced. So, you know, you have to give it credit for that. Another thing is that, you know, the manufacturing of the vehicle is a giant leap forward for Tesla. You know, less parts, easier to build, stronger vehicle, you know, kind of ticks all those boxes when usually those things are fighting against each other. If you want to make it stronger, you know, you usually have to make it heavier. That doesn't seem to be the case in the Cybertruck's realm. So the problem is that, you know, like a lot of other electric vehicles that have come up in the last few years, they seem to be chasing more energy usage, not less energy usage. You look at the Porsche Taycan, you look at the I-Pace, you look at you know, these big SUV-ish type electric vehicles that are coming out. You know, the Rivian uses a huge battery pack to have, you know, pretty limited range, you know, in the 200-250 mile range.
Yeah.
The Aptera is the counter to that trend. If you want to be the most efficient per mile, you want to be in an Aptera. And that's exactly kind of the opposite of the less cram more batteries into this SUV approach, to get it over 200 miles, approach. But we think that, that should have, you know, just as much of a following as hopefully the Cybertruck has. people like the Cybertruck because it's big and tough and can still go, a good amount of distance. And, there's a lot of value in that. And the Aptera is the other side of the coin. If you want to be light and nimble and use just enough to get you from point A to point B, but still have an exciting ride and a car that you may never have to plug in, that's the Aptera. So two edges of the coin. We would love to see people with a Cybertruck in one side of their garage and Aptera on the other side. They use the Cybertruck on the weekends and they use the Aptera to go to work and do most of their driving. So.
Yeah. Have we sort of reached that? It seems to me, I'm seeing a lot of stories with the coronavirus and the stimulus package that got, approved in the Senate yesterday, still has to go through the House and then, over to the White House for a signature. But I'm seeing a lot of stories about how now is the opportunity to begin to change our mindset and change the world and begin to tackle, some of the environmental issues that obviously the Aptera addresses. Has the market, do you think this will have a change on the mindset of the American people and elsewhere in the world with that respect?
Yeah, I think, just looking like myself, I had to go online and, buy masks from somewhere that are from Korea, but they're warehoused somewhere nearby, and they're going to hopefully come in 3 or 4 days. We don't make masks here in this country anymore. We don't make a lot of electronics parts in this country, and all it takes is one small perturbation, and you see just ripple through the supply chain, and it's affecting automotive, it's affecting medicines and food. So I fully expect, it's not that I just hope, I expect that a lot of people who spend a lot of money to mitigate risk or pay for the result of risk are going to try and onshore some of these jobs again. And I think it'll be great for our economy because as you look across economies throughout the world, the ones that have more skilled jobs tend to have better standards of living and quality of life. And we've taken a lot of those skilled jobs away. And so I hope, if anything, from the COVID-19 experience, if anything that comes out of it that helps the economy, I think it's going to be related to bringing those jobs back to the U.S.
Yeah. Well,
I also hope that people can reflect on having this kind of national attitude change is something that's possible. I mean, as a nation, we're coming together to solve this COVID crisis. And once we do solve it over the coming months here, I think we'll hopefully have a renewed sense on the ability of America to make big decisions like that and execute. And hopefully that translates to environmental concerns too. That if we want to tackle climate change, or if we want to tackle efficiency and transportation, we can jump on it, and we can make these big society changes that need to happen to make stuff like this possible.
Yeah. Everybody, I think if I'm correct here, I think people, if they want to get involved with what you guys are doing. I understand that you just almost a month ago, Chris, you announced that you guys had lined up $2 million in venture funding, private funding. You have a WeFunder webpage that I think you got 6 days left, folks, to if you want to be an investor in the company. Tell us a little bit about that as we wrap up here.
Yeah, I'm a finance guy by training, actually. This is my eighth company, I think. But out of college, I had a finance degree. I started a brokerage firm right out of college. I did direct public offerings and IPO for a while. So I've seen the finance world from the inside. And one of the shames with the original Aptera funding model was, we had to go the traditional route of finding venture capital type money and building the company from there, because that was really the only option available. But with the Jobs Act of 2009, there was a very small provision that didn't get a lot of notice, and it took forever to implement. But it was to allow the ability of smaller companies to raise money. Basically, if you had less than $50 million a year in revenue, you could go to the public and raise money instead of having to have all these onerous legal requirements to be able to invest, which restricted most of those investments to venture capital types. So now, it took till 2016, I think, to really implement the rule from the Jobs Act. But now there's these crowdfunding platforms where you can actually buy equity in a company that you believe in, and you don't have to have all these legal requirements to invest. Basically, you can put down your credit card for $100 and you can buy into an idea that you believe in. So, you know, what an amazing thing to be able to invest in Apple or Google or Microsoft in the early days of their existence, and then be able to grow with those ideas over the years and also see your investment grow. That really is what this whole crowdfunding thing is about. It gives people the opportunity to invest in ideas they love with very little restrictions. They don't have to be an accredited investor and have more than $2 million in the bank. They really just have to have a passion for the idea that they're looking at, and $100 in their bank account to put into the companies.
So we
think it's a great way for our fans to support us, and it's wefunder.com/Aptera.
Okay, good. I was going to ask you for that URL. So good.
Yeah.
Wefunder.com/Aptera. All right, good guys.
Yes, sir.
That's right.
Guys, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us, and especially for what you guys are doing, resurrecting a really good idea that I hope this time, given all the changes in technology, given the, I think, the growing concern people have for the environment and for just jobs in America now, that that this is going to be, this time around is going to be a success for you.
Thank you very much. Thanks for the opportunity.
Thanks, Joe.
Okay. You guys stay healthy out there.
You too.
Thank you, you too.
Okay, all right. Bye-bye.
Thank you, bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to an EV World Future in Motion podcast with your host, Bill Moore. Be sure to follow me on Twitter and learn more about the exciting world of electric vehicles on evworld.com. This has been an EV World production. All rights reserved.